good morning, everyone. Welcome to Live Dharma Sunday for March 24th, 2013. Koyu Kubota here. Glad you joined us. Yeah, spring is fully here, although I know in the northeastern part of the country and elsewhere, sometimes spring comes in like a lion. And yes, no storms and whatnot. Out here in California, I feel it's springtime even during the winter. It's so relative, but meteorologically, March 21st is the official beginning of spring. And I was changing, as I usually do, every morning, the dial the Dharma. You know, we have it computerized, sort of a computer library of that we had converted from cassette tapes. We've been doing this for maybe close to 30 years now. Dial the Dharma service. We have over 200 short talks that we had my father tape. This was when I was in teaching in University of Wisconsin in Janesville, Wisconsin, and which is about 2 hours away from Chicago. And some weekends, my parents would come to visit, and on those occasions, we would sit down in the study and have my father read some. And it's only about one page reading taken from his transcribed talks and so forth, and ones that we thought were good, and he edited them out, and then he would read them. And anywhere from 1 to 3 minutes long. And these became the basis for Dial the Dharma. We put it on answering machine in those days. And then I added some, and we started to alternate. First we started, I think, one talk, we just left it on for a whole week. But then we went daily. We tape every day. And then I made some tapes, and then we would alternate one day his, the next day mine, and so forth. And then finally, a few years ago, we got them all computerized. And now I just have to select the daily one, go down the list alphabetically or whatever. And the reason I mention this is because this morning as I selected the next one in line, it's Robin, the Buddhist bird. And of course, Robin, you know, we see Robin and say, hey, it's springtime. And I talked about that. And then the next tape following that, I usually have it, it's called Splat, because I remember there was a cartoon strip in the newspaper that two characters are there, and one says, hey, there's a robin, first sign of spring. Then the guy looks up, Splat, and he says, oh, man, this sure is not a good sign of spring. It was white, but it wasn't snow that hit him in the face. And the teaching here is, you know, we could talk about Robin and springtime and all that renewal means, spiritual renewal. It's pretty high-flying stuff. But the Robin sends his message, sort of a Zen-like message, Splat! On to idealized, lofty, conceptual, abstract thinking about spring and everything. Here's spring, baby. Splat, you know. Reality. And that splatness is a part of life, too. You always have to realize this. Okay? And vice versa, you know. Well, today we're so honored to have as our guest to give us a Dharma glimpse, Christine Kubose, who's the oldest grandchild of Reverend Guillaume and Minnie Kubose. She's a board member of our Right Down Center of Oneness Buddhism, and she's a practicing physical therapist in Southern California. So, without further ado, Christine Kubose.
Hey, good morning, everybody. I'm going to talk today about passions. Passion, to me, is the essence of life. It is what drives us and is the root of our existence. Life's purpose is found through passion. And when we find our life purpose, it brings out not only joy to ourselves, but to others. So I think of passion as something that we could do pretty much 24/7 and not get tired of it. We can be for hours and be in a state of joy. There's no concern of time, no concern of money. And I want to read a letter that a friend of mine wrote to parents who just lost their son. His name is Greg. He was only 51 years old, and he died from brain cancer that he fought for about 3 years. He was a physician and a husband, and he had 2 children. Here's the letter. It says, "Dear Dr. So-and-so and Dixie, not having had children myself, I can only imagine that a parent has an unprotected heart when it comes to losing the life of a child which they brought into this world. Seeing them for the first time, their first smile, their first heartache, their accomplishments and failures, successes and educational advances are few of the rewards of being a parent. Only God knows the answers of why the loss must occur out of the order of which it should be. I have nothing amazing to say, except I have much love and respect for both of you, for your family you have created and inspired, worked for, and cared for. It does not go unnoticed to those that watch from a distance. To be part of a legacy of generations of accomplishments, of promise, of God's love, and the hope for a better future is something I think of you both. The 3 precious hours of his 51 years I spent with him those last few days will be forever imprinted in my heart. I want you to know for me, his life meant something, and the precious moments of his presence, his kindness and yours. He was brave. I am sure in the silence of the night, he smiles in your mind and he touches you in your soul. Or there are moments in the day that the wind will blow in your face or someone will laugh that will remind you of him. The heaviness of the unprotected heart can take your breath away. I want you to know I will carry a part of your son, his deep life with me in this journey of my life. Significant events, people you meet, work you pursue, all create who you are and become. Thank you for allowing me to meet him. It was an honor and privilege I did not take for granted, and he will be forever remembered. I keep you daily in my prayers, as well as his immediate family, his siblings, and their families." And, you know, just reading that letter really made me realize passion. So spending those few hours with Greg will have a lasting imprint, not only for this friend of mine, this therapist, but for the family as well. And she has her passion, and that's helping people as a therapist, which is obviously apparent. So my question is, well, how does one find passion? I mean, it could be from a person you meet, a book or a poem you read or a movie. It could be from trying a new craft or something as simple as seeing a blooming flower that stimulates a thought. Now, I found my passion from a totally random conversation with this girl that I kind of hardly really even knew, but I worked with her about 23 years ago. And we were just talking one day, and she said, "Oh, I always wanted to be a physical therapist." And at that point, I had never even heard of that profession. And then she kind of described it to me, and I thought, oh, that's what I want to do. So sometimes I kind of think about what I have done if I had not had that conversation with her. And last summer, my youngest daughter, she had her iPod Touch. You know, kids these days have those iPod Touches. And she took a picture of a leaf that had a small hole in it so you could see what was behind it. And it turned out really, really cool. And we're like, wow, you know, that's great. And so from that time on, she's just been taking pictures. And I bought her a camera for Christmas, and that's kind of becoming her passion. You know, she starts seeing things, oh, I wish I had my camera. And my other daughter, she has a passion, I know, for creating things. She creates movies and movie trailers and websites. She can sit literally at her laptop for hours and be in a state of joy. And I know from my heart that Grandpa Kobose found his passion with teaching and spreading Buddhism to people that he did for many, many years. So my question to you is, with passion being what can drive us and how we find joy, have you found your passion? Well, thank you, and I hope everybody has a great day.
Wow. Thank you very much, Christine. I really enjoyed that. It is indeed gives us pause to the karmic influences, where we find inspiration, or how our life turns on sort of seemingly chance, insignificant moments. And that's really true. I think people have all kinds of stories about, I'm hoping that, you know, when you think about it, when as a young person, when you're looking for direction in life, it's kind of scary. It's a big world out there. We don't know who we are, and we're searching. And of course, what makes it even more agonizing is that we think that our choice is forever. And that's why I say, oh, what am I going to do, you know? And of course, later on we find out that we may make significant changes in it, or, you know, very different, or it may evolve and go and find its own path as water goes down the mountainside this way and that way. But at the moment, we think, you know, in our conception, our ideals, I'm going to do this, and then this is going to determine so much of my life. And for those, I remember that they had a passion. You could see they found it early, even maybe as a young child. Said, "This is what I'm going to do," and you know, they go on and do it in that direction. I always admired and was a little envious of people who had found that, and I didn't find mine until later. And have to struggle with it. Well, I guess some flowers bloom later than others. Some are early bloomers and some take a long time. And that's all right. That's the way it should be. But indeed, I think the parents' job, or friends or whatever, is to give the opportunities, the exposure of different interests. You want to try soccer, you want to try playing a musical instrument, take a photography, show them, don't force them, put your own influences on them, and say, well, then if you start something, whatever you agreed upon, taking this lesson or something, then you want to drop it, fine. And in the beginning, it's encouraged that smorgasbord approach. Try a lot of different things. That way, you'll be more surety of, hey, yeah, okay, this, I like this. And a lot of people, they don't find that. And those that do not find that kind of passion, inspiration, life's purpose, or as Joseph Campbell would call it, one's bliss, these are the type of people that I think Thoreau described as leading lives of quiet desperation. I remember the movie The Hustler, with Jackie Gleason and Paul Newman. Paul Newman was a was an up-and-coming pool player. And Jackie Gleason played the Minnesota Fats. He was the reigning champ, so to speak. Paul Newman was an up-and-coming guy, young kid. And Piper Laurie, I think, was his girlfriend. And Paul Newman was struggling because all he knew was how to play pool, you know. He loved to play pool. He didn't have an occupation. He was a hustler. That's how he made some money. When he was, they were on a picnic on a countryside, he and Piper Laurie, and he was describing to her how he felt when he was playing pool. Oh, the stick in his arm became one, and the whole world stopped, and he just won with playing pool. And Piper Laurie says, "You know, you're a lucky fellow. There's so many people that can never find something like that in their life." Sometimes it's kind of scary when you... I remember one time when I was teaching at the University of Wisconsin, I mentioned in Janesville, and in my intro psych classes, I guess I was kind of a creative teacher. You know, we tried to make things experiential and relate to the students, and had a lot of exercises and things, and always was trying new things. And it was maybe, I guess, end of the term, and I happened to run across a fellow. I knew he was in one of my classes, and walking across campus. So it was a chance meeting, and I said, "Hey, how's it going, everything?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "What are you going to, how's your studies going?" He was fine, and I said, "I think you had mentioned that you were going to be, you were going to go into journalism." He goes, "Oh, I changed my mind." I said, "Oh, what are you going to do?" He goes, "Oh, I'm going to go into education." I said, "Oh, how come you changed?" He said, "Oh, because I like the way you taught. You know, the excitement that you taught in teaching us, and so I want to do that and incorporate it when I am going to and teaching children." And I said, "Oh," and he parted. And as I walked away, I was thinking to myself, "Wow, that's well." Of course, I felt good that it was a compliment, but like I said, it's kind of scary. I said, "Gee, I had that kind of impact unknowingly on people's lives." And I don't think it's just a formal teacher for me. All of us, how we treat others, strangers, maybe a smile to a stranger on your morning commute, can impact them, even unknown to them, about their day. We don't know where our influence goes. Of course, teachers, we see a poster in the teacher's lounge, and we might cynically think that this poster is for the teacher's morale, but it is true when it says, the poster says, "Teacher, you never know where teacher's influence stops." Because the teacher influences a young mind, and that person grows up and influences other people, goes on to do great things, and that has its karmic ripples out. And as I said, it's not just teachers, but all of us. And we should not be awestruck by this, actually, or think about it even. You shine your light, and you don't have to say, "Oh, my light's shining over here, or in this dark corner." No, you just shine, because that is your passion. The sun doesn't shine and say, "Hey, where's my reward," or anything like this. That's the beauty of it. that's the beauty of it. I'd like to close with a story that I remember, well, not a story, it was when Christine visited us for Thanksgiving some years ago when we were in Chicago, and we went to the lakefront for a morning to see the sunrise, and we went, took this hike to Lakefront Path to Inspiration Point, right near the Northwestern University campus over there, Lake Michigan right there, and then we shouted out, you know, a phrase. And of course, Lake Michigan, if you look on this promontory point, you could see the horizon, all 180 degrees. It's like looking out at an ocean. That kind of atmosphere, you know, early dawn. Express yourself. And I remember Christine's phrase was, live a life of no regret. And this was a chapter title from Everyday Success, from Grandfather's, Reverend Gil May Kabosa's book. And I think this is one of the key phrases in her life. And I think it reflects what she talked about. Live a life of no regret. Go for it. Don't sell out. Don't second guess yourself. And then compromise with your life. And then at the end, autumn of your years, have some regrets. What a way to, that's not a way to live. And she did follow her bliss, you know. She went to Australia for advanced training in physical therapy. It was a big step. You uproot a secure job at a hospital, and you take your young children, and you go for over a year to Australia and live there. And when she came back, she went out on her own, formed her own physical therapy company, corporation, and it's thriving, and she's doing it. She's doing it. And, you know, when she talked about just the stranger comment about physical therapists, I'm going to do that, or it'd be interesting to see whether her daughter pursues photography, keeps doing that, you know, as whether it's a serious hobby or whether it's career related, it doesn't matter. But the smallness of it. I remember there was a drama school student who majored in drama at Southern Illinois, dramatic arts. And when I asked her how she chose that, she says, "Well, when I was in elementary school, you would do these little skits, you know, for class." And the teacher said to her, "Hey, Nicole, you're good at that. And she, you know, of course, I filled her with a warm glow. But that teacher's remark, a feedback, "Hey, you're good at that." She went on to as her major in drama. Little things. Small is big. Small is big. Sometimes we put things unimportant versus important. Well, I got to do important things. I don't want to waste time with unimportant things. We don't know. But, and as a last example of this, personal example of, you know, Christine's good at, as a physical therapist. And we family members at family get-togethers, sometimes we impose ourselves on her and we say, "Hey, I got an ache here, I got this." And one time I had come back from, my brother and I went to a reunion. You know, a lot of these clubs, so-called clubs in Chicago in the early 50s and so forth, Japanese-American community, you always had little cliques, little clubs. I belonged to the Vikings, blah, blah, blah. what we had athletic teams, and you know, maybe anywhere from a dozen guys. We hung out together, went to high school, grew up together, went to dances together and stuff like this. And so the people over the years scattered all over the country, but a lot of times every year we had a reunion, which is a big thing at Las Vegas. So my brother and I went to one, and you know, you stand around in the lobbies and you meet somebody and you're talking. So, but the point is, I was standing a lot more than I used to, standing around talking to people. And when I came back, I found out that my right hip, there was a numbness there. It would come and go, but it persisted. So at this family gathering, I asked Christina, I said, hey, I told her about it. She said, okay, let me take a look at you. She went, She had me stand straight and said, yeah, you're a little bit off kilter here. Yep, right here. And so she had me lie down and then twist my hips, okay? And then with my knees bent, okay, put some pressure like this one way and twist my body this way. And do that once in a while, she says, you know, this thing acts up. And in a few days, bam, my numbness was gone. It's like a miracle. And I told her about that. I said, you're a miracle worker. That alignment is so important, bodily alignment. You know? And sometimes when you look at somebody, you can see their one shoulder's higher than the other. They're all kind of really, you know, not lined up. And it could make a big effect on their whole health, you know, and their mood, everything. And I'm so impressed. And sometimes when I'm lying in bed, and if I lie on my back and I raise my knees up, and then I put one leg over the other knee, and then bring it down to the bed one way or the other, do one side and the other side, but putting my left knee down to the right, you know, forcing it down with my right leg as I lie on my back, that's my position to, it's harder to do it that way than the other leg still going to the left. Okay? Because I'm tight on that side. Maybe it's because I'm right-handed and there's more tension in muscles that I use on my right side or whatever. So I got to compensate for this and stretch that out. And I do that, you know, now and then, and I had no problems anymore. So how is your posture, your spiritual posture? How is your life aligned in terms of your priorities? You know, sometimes a teaching can go both ways. You become attached to the teaching of non-attachment, or we get prideful because we're so humble. You know, there's all kinds of little things. That's a little, gets a little bit of out of off kilter. You always have to keep going. So until next time, you always keep going. That's all for today's broadcast. You have a very beautiful, inspirational, passion-filled, aligned posture day to day. Thank you.